Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. To read Benjamin Bush's memoir, Dust to Dust, is to confront the big, hard questions of humanity. Life and death, peace and war, family, honor, duty, and the frailty of all of it. Bush writes of his life's often surreal interactions with nature and its destruction, whether that destruction is being wrought by landmines or natural erosion. A Marine Corps combat veteran whose tours of duty took him from desert to desert, outpost to outpost across the world, Bush has had several brushes with death, and in his prose, he can be eerily detached from the carnage he's seen. Yet despite his misgivings about, say, the Second Iraq War, the one-time Vassar student and upstate New York resident is open about the magnetism of the military to a precocious child who once lived for adventure and purpose. After combat, Bush has taken his childhood pretensions full circle as an actor, appearing, often in a costume version of uniform, on the screen in programs like The Wire. Dust to Dust is now out in paperback from Echo, and it's a pleasure to welcome him back to the roundtable. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Ian.
How did your experiences as a student at Vassar influence the way you write now?
Well, I've often said that Vassar doesn't teach you any particular vocational skill. You don't come out of Vassar trained to do something specific, but what it does do is teach you how to think your way out of anything. And so when I was there, I'd come from a high school art program in upstate New York. I thought I could draw, but I didn't come there with the full weight of what artistic ideas really were. I didn't have a sense of context, and that's what Vassar gave me. And it taught me that the artist's job is always to search for nuance, to find subtlety in everything. And that applied to the awareness that I already had, was really the great gift that Vassar gave me. And I've used it ever since. I think it actually informed much of my work, even in the military.
How much did you stick out in the military as a very creative and artistic person? One of the funnier moments in your book is you correcting, I think, a drill sergeant that Vassar was not necessarily a girls' college anymore, and it was actually, if you're going to be correct about it, it would be a women's college, one of the moments of levity in your writing.
Yeah, well, you know, funny things do happen throughout your life. It's not a, I wouldn't say all told, it's not a very humorous book, but there is humor in all things, and that situation certainly brought something to mind. You know, girls' school was such a maligned way of terming Vassar College at the time, which had been co-ed since 1969, but very few people kind of knew that because of its reputation. And the women at Vassar had well trained me to correct girls' school to women's college whenever I heard it. So I don't know that I stuck out because, you know, what goes on in your head isn't always so readily apparent. I was always thinking artistically. I was always aware of art happening around me and paying attention for it. In the military, I didn't really do a lot of artwork, but I was recording things in my head. There was a large discussion that had begun in art and life that I continued. And I felt that the two were intertwined or even interdependent. Not so much that I lived one life in the military and one life in art. I was always both those creatures, both an artistic one and a martial one.
And did you keep like copious notes or a journal throughout all of your travels? Because your memory of specific details is really impeccable.
I pretty much have a photographic memory for imagery, which has been very useful. It does not, it's not the pure kind of photographic memory, which includes words. And I don't have an oral memory. I remember very few, very particular things said. And that's why if you took all the whole book, you know, you probably got about 4 or 5 pages of dialogue in the entire thing because I don't remember verbally. But I remember imagery with incredible clarity. So it's a very visual book. And I think that's where you see the visual artist at work trying to translate imagery into language. What I hope, of course, is that the reader is able to see with my eyes.
There's an extraordinary moment in the book when you were serving in Iraq, I believe, and dealing with some locals someone passes a note up that basically says, Benjamin Bush will be assassinated today. And you pivot away from whatever obvious human fears you might be feeling at that moment to put on a brave face for the sake of, you know, your own standing among these people and stability. And I wondered how much of your experience being in the military was akin to the acting that you've done after and the way you, you played as a child. I mean, I think there was more performance in that than maybe some of us expected.
I absolutely agree. I'm glad you picked that up. I think some of my best acting actually was in Iraq, simply because of the fact that I was very frustrated. I mean, it was an incredibly difficult situation every day. And I did have a position that came with certain expectations. You know, my Marines expected me to be invulnerable. And so I had to believe that I was. And the Iraqis themselves were also looking for vulnerability. They were looking for, at the same time, for strength, for confidence. And in the face of these things, you know, I created an invulnerable persona. You know, you kind of cloak yourself in a certain belief in your own immortality. You create your own myth. And that's what an actor does. An actor has to move into a character and inhabit them all the way in, enough that, you know, their emotions are reflected in their eyes. You play someone that you half are and half can't be. And I think I did that a lot in Iraq because, I was a public performer to an extent. And I think you carry your experiences back and forth. I think that when I came back from my first tour in Iraq, the first audition I had was for Officer Anthony Colicchio on The Wire on HBO. And he was a very frustrated police officer.
Very brash and closed-minded, sort of quick to, you know, push someone up against a police car.
Yeah, but at the same time, he was someone who had an uncompromising sense of justice. That's why he was frustrated. He was seeing things black and white in Baltimore, which is a city of gray. The police are cheating, the criminals are cheating, and he couldn't stand any of it.
And a very good evening to you, Officer Colicchio.
F*** yourself with a 40 breath. What the f*** is all that about?
Can't bust every head, Tony.
I can't?
Bust every head, who are you going to talk to when this shit happens?
It was coming from a war which had been entirely gray, which, you know, as a Marine, you hope is a noble mission. And that was compromised very early. So I think all these experiences feed into, you know, your performances, and your performances feed back into your life. You begin to gather all this, you know, like I talk about emotional resonance and also memory. And begin to build who you really are. And I feed off of all of that. I think there's some truth in Tony Colicchio for me.
You know, Benjamin, your book ends, and I don't want to spoil it for anyone, so warning, but, you know, your parents both die in quick succession. Certainly, you know, we've all dealt with loss, and I wondered if your exploration of, you know, the larger view of the way this world works and that it keeps spinning prepared you at all for that, or, you know, made it any easier, or were you still caught in, you know, a very human grieving moment when those two deaths happened?
I was completely stunned. And I think it happens to all of us. We know there are certain inevitable truths. We will lose our parents if we're children. We will be lost to our children if we have children. These are things which, you know, are inevitable. And even on an intellectual level, you might be aware of this truth. We live, I think, with these two truths. You know, we have this child's truth, this child's view of things, this child's belief. And we have the adult's perspective, which is built over time, when we have a sense of consequence, when we have rubbed against the world a little bit. And I'd come back from a very bloody tour. Ramadi in 2005 was just a terrible place to be. I'd lost good friends there. I'd been wounded there. I arrived home on my daughter's first birthday. She had just turned one. And she had no idea who I was. You know, she hid behind my wife and was sweet, but she had no idea that I was her father, the other parent. And I thought there was something terrible about that. As I became a parent, really, you know, in such close proximity after seeing her born, I left for war and came back to her being a fully realized little being. And then within a year, I lost both of my parents. And there was an awful lot of transition in that, that coming from the randomness of death, which was war, to this life. And then to lose my parents and becoming the parent and being an orphan. It doesn't matter at what time in your life that occurs. There's something shocking about it. And I did what all children do. I sought my parents, who were now dead. And the place I could find them was memory. And in looking for them, for the first time, I really found myself. You know, the time when they were closest to me was when I was most dependent upon them, when I was young. And my strongest first memories really, you know, when I'm around age 5, 6, and 7, and through our early time in the countryside up through my teen years. And they were rich in that time period. And that was the thing that amazed me was the strange fight between my childhood beliefs and my adult realizations. With their loss, the child in me thought it absolutely impossible. I mean, I truly had those beliefs that it was ridiculous that my mother and father had died. And that's what I was struggling with. That this need to find them led to a discovery of my own pathway to where I was, and the fact that, you know, I have children, and someday I too will be lost to them, and to tell them that now is kind of absurd. Why ruin the magic of childhood? Why ruin these beliefs, which are so powerful in children, that they are protected, that they are loved, that it is a perpetual bond? And the truth is that it won't last.
Your father was a novelist, Frederick Bush, and now you've written a memoir that seeks to preserve, you know, your memories of him. Do you see the family business being passed down to the next generation? I mean, will you encourage your own children to write?
Well, I never thought I would write, and not out of resistance to my father's career or, you know, that discomfort between what one's profession is and what another's is. I thought I could solve everything I wished to express visually. I became a filmmaker, a photographer, I'm a drawer, and that is where I felt my strength to be. No surprise that the book is very visually written. But what I discovered in trying to articulate these ideas to other people was that I couldn't give you pictures. I could not, you know, I could not physically show you an image of me being alone in these various places because there are no pictures that exist. And to do that would be a complete recreation. So what I had to do was give you those images from my mind, where they lived with the most clarity. I think everyone should be encouraged to record their narrative in some way. I don't think they have to do it as an assignment. I don't think they have to do it as a profession. But I think it's interesting. It's part of our great archive. You know, there's many people being encouraged to write their war stories now for the National Archives. I think we're forgetting to record the lives of people who are not in, you know, considered in extreme circumstance. How many stories around me right now are rich with human experience and are being lost one farmer at a time? I live in rural Michigan right now, and there was an 82-year-old farmer who came and cut our hay, who had been born in the house we own right now. And I always wanted to ask him, all the stories about this land, what had been here before, the people who had lived here, and just, you know, the stories of the community. And then before I ever really got around to it, you know, he died. And now I just will never know.
We've been speaking with Benjamin Bush. He's the author of Dust to Dust, a memoir which is now out in paperback. And you may recognize him from acting roles on programs like HBO's The Wire. Benjamin, it's been a real honor to speak with you, and thanks for opening up with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ian. It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.